Hi and welcome to Let's Talk Practice Education, Learn Your Way, the podcast of the NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde Corporate Practice Education Team. Listen in to hear what's happening with education locally. Let us keep you up to date to support you in your professional development and revalidation requirements. Tune in every week and listen to stories and conversations to inspire you and support you in maintaining a quality learning environment.
Hi everyone and welcome to this episode of Let's Talk Practice Education. And today the topic's going to be about reasonable adjustments for students out in clinical practice with a focus on supporting students who have dyslexia. My name's Sharon Gardner and I'm a practice education facilitator with the Corporate Practice Education Team in NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde. And I'm joined by my colleague, Robert Jenner, who's also a practice education facilitator. And Robert's kindly agreed to record this podcast to share his own experiences of having dyslexia. So thanks, Robert, for joining me here today. I thought it would be useful if we could just even start with you telling me, what is dyslexia? What does it mean?
Hi, thanks, Sharon. So thanks for inviting me along. Hi, so dyslexia, so the actual Latin description for dyslexia is difficulty with language or difficulty with words. However, dyslexia is a wee bit more complex than that, and it depends on different folk. In a similar way to like autism spectrum disorder, dyslexia is on a spectrum. So folk can go from having, you know, some areas of challenge to the other end of the spectrum being quite complex. So it's a bit of a range, if you like. Me personally, I perhaps sit in the upper range when it comes to difficulties in my day-to-day life. And so different folk have different areas of challenge. So it can be in relation to, for me, it's about memory and recall. So if you tell me, look, it's like if I was to stop and ask directions for somebody, and they say, go up the road and turn left and turn right. After they say, go up the road and turn left, the rest of the information I can't remember. I would have to write it down. So I can't remember sequencing items of information. So that's that memory recall. It's also relating to phonological processing. So processing the information you're given. So it's not just about the items that you're given. It's also about the complexity of the language and then decoding that into something that you can use to make sense of it, if you like. I also have difficulty relating to, so a lot of folk who have dyslexia also have dyspraxia, and dyspraxia affects your coordination and movement. So I'm quite clumsy, and that relates to my dyslexia as well. And interestingly as well, if someone who has dyslexia, often they will use different parts of their brain for processing, and evidence shows that folk with dyslexia will use the area of the brain that's usually attributed to balance to process information, which is why often folk with dyslexia are quite clumsy, because they're using that area of the brain for something different. So the brain's a wonderful thing.
And how does that affect you and you as a nurse, Robert, in your career as a nurse?
So different areas. So, you know, as a clinician, as a practitioner, I'll be having to gather information about my patient. So my patient's, you know, medical condition, my patient's medication, whatever support they need, whoever else is involved, be that, you know, physio or occupational therapist or speech and language. And so that presents quite a complex picture. Often folk have got quite complex needs, and there's usually comorbidities, so more than one mental or physical health concern to be managing. So the difficulties is remembering everything, remembering all my patients, and I've got some strategies for that with different electronic software. It's also, again, if you're presenting me with lots of information, the odds are I'm not going to remember it. So that can be difficult as well. And when it comes to doing practical things like taking somebody's blood pressure, often I can be a bit fumbly and you know, a bit discoordinated despite having done it, you know, thousands of times throughout my career. I still find those wee fine things, or even taking somebody's blood, you know, just the processing and getting everything lined up ready. Often I can struggle with that at times as to, you know, what I've done in the process or what I've got to do next. And I usually lay things out in military order to help me remember.
So going back to your memory, you spoke about that in other areas where you have difficulty. Do you have any reasonable adjustments in place for that, for them?
So, yeah, so as an employee within the NHS, and not just within the NHS, but as an employee with any company, you can access what's called the Access to Work. And that's a system that's available through the Department of Work and Pensions. And you can apply for that to get support and work for things like, you know, hardware and software. So these are the reasonable adjustments that I would get, you know, within my workplace. So I've applied for that, and I have different software available to help with different tasks. For example, one of the ones I have is, so to save me typing, I've got a speech to text software. And so I just talk into my headset and then it types it up. It sounds wonderful. It doesn't always get it right. It's often frustrating working with it. But it balances out as to the, you know, the time it would take me to correct my spelling. And again, I've got another software package that helps me do that. Where you've got, you know, phonetic sounding similar words like there, as in T-H-E-I-R, and there, T-H-E-R-E. If I was typing that or using that, often I would get mixed up with these because they're similar. And I've got another software would give me the options of the two different meanings of the word, and then I can, you know, choose one or choose two. And so that, so another software package I have helps me. So being dyslexic or having dyslexia, I'm more creative brain focused, so I can see things, usually the whole picture, but I like to use visual references. So one of that would be mind maps. So I've got another software package where I can kind of brainstorm ideas as a mind map, and then I can then transfer and change that to become a PowerPoint presentation or a Word document. So it's a different way of creating information in a more creative way.
And obviously these have helped you out in practice when you were a nurse or a practitioner. But going back to your kind of role as a PEF, do you need any additional reasonable adjustments as a PEF, or are you still able to use these same aids?
No, the same software and hardware that I have is beneficial in my current role, because it's very similar when it comes to, you know, presenting information, recording information and sharing information. So there's still the same challenges relating to my dyslexia. And these software packages do help. In fact, I've just recently put in another application to the Department of Work and Pensions because the software is updated. So there's new versions of all these different software, and you usually do that every couple of years. You just get reassessed, etc. So it's really helpful.
And thinking about our students out in clinical practice, they're obviously not employees of NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde. So are these support options or aids available to students?
So yeah, typically, so if a student knows that they have dyslexia, so this may have been assessed and, you know, recorded when they were at school. And if that's happened, then usually they'll have a report. So you get an assessment from an educational psychologist, and they then provide this huge report which details your difficulties in great detail, usually quite complex language. So often someone with dyslexia would need some help to decode what it means. And you can get help for that from Dyslexia Scotland. They're a really excellent charitable organisation, and they can help you do that. And an offshoot for them is Dyslexia ScotWest. That's where I'd get support from before. And so if a student comes along to say, let's say they come from school and they've already got an assessment and then they go into university, the ideal scenario would be is they present themselves to the university, but they also declare that they need reasonable adjustments, but that they might not be familiar with that term. So they would be sent along to the disability service. And then within the disability service, they would look at their dyslexia and help determine what reasonable adjustments might be put in place during study. So, you know, this normally, as you would hear, is somebody with dyslexia getting additional time in exams. Or you could have a note taker, an amanuensis is the correct title, is someone that would take notes and actually, so you would dictate to them. So it would usually take place in a separate room for your exam, for example, and you would speak and then your note taker would write your answers for the exam. So that would help when they're in university, but it's slightly different when they come out into placement to the practice learning environment. So there's a slightly different process that occurs for that should be considered before they come out into practice. And that then comes together and they devise what's called a reasonable adjustment plan for when they're out in practice. And that might be depending on who the person is, you know, how they get support, let's say, during the medication round or something similar like that. But it's as I described, it's diverse. And actually the term that's currently been used to describe someone with dyslexia would be neurodiversity. So we're all neurodiverse in our own way, even folk that don't identify with having dyslexia.
Robert, and I suppose, do you think it would be helpful to actually define what is reasonable adjustment? You know, you've mentioned that term a few times and you've given us some examples, but how would you define what is reasonable?
That's a really good question. So reasonableness depends on each individual. It's slightly different for each individual. There isn't a cookie cutter way of supporting each person in practice. It would depend on you and your own difficulties where they sit. So a reasonable adjustment, if we think about in relation to the NMC standards, when it comes to so our students come out into the practice learning environment, all students are expected to meet these standards in the same way as their peers. So we wouldn't be looking to alter the standards to meet a student's needs. What would be more reasonable is that the method for the student to achieve these standards has is altered in a reasonable way to suit them, to suit their learning, to suit their way of engaging with language, engaging with information. So it comes into relation to, so there used to be what was called the Disability Discrimination Act. And the Disability Discrimination Act helped, as the title perhaps suggests, is to prevent those who have a disability being discriminated against, whether directly or indirectly. And when the Equality Act came into being, the Disability Discrimination Act was taken into the Equality Act along with a couple of others. The Sexual Discrimination Act, for example, was embraced in there as well. So within the Equality Act, there are what are called protected characteristics. There's a couple of different names for that as well, but this makes sense as to what it's described. So one of these characteristics is having a disability. So if you have a disability, it has to be recognised that that is in existence. And so therefore, in order for you to function similar to your peers, one would expect, and employees are expected as well, because it's within the law, that they make adjustments to help support an employee, or in this case, as we're talking about, a student.
And thinking about, again, students going out into clinical practice, what if they're not aware that they have dyslexia or they don't disclose that they have dyslexia? Do they need to disclose?
So I think there's several questions there. So deal with the last one. Does a student need to disclose? The answer to that is no. No one, and the same with any other condition, you don't have an obligation to disclose anything. It's your private and personal information. So no, they don't have to disclose. It's no, we can't, we as practitioners or, you know, as our practice assessor, practice supervisor or line manager can't insist someone tells us something if it's private and personal. However, in relation to dyslexia, my own personal experience is when I have disclosed that I have dyslexia to my peers, they've always been very supportive. You know, they've always, you know, come back and said, oh, I didn't know that, or something similar. And then come in with a comment, okay, so what does that mean? How can I help you? And very helpfully, you know, I can then describe how best they can support me. One example might be, if you're giving me lots of information, let's not have a chat. If you can send me an email, and then I've got all the information there, then I can respond, you know, usually verbally to the email. But I wouldn't remember everything you tell me, and then I wouldn't be able to pay attention. I'd have to take notes as you were telling me. So it can make that be a bit more complex. So what was the other part of that question there, Sharon? So
I think the first part was, do you know, quite often you'll have students that are maybe not aware that they actually have dyslexia.
Yeah. That's a really good point. And so I suppose if the student isn't aware they have dyslexia, and yet, you know, us as a line manager, a practice assessor, practice supervisor, are noticing traits. So if we've got some knowledge of dyslexia, what typical traits are, and these are listed within the reasonable adjustments presentation that you can have a look at to back up what I'm talking about. And what did I say there? I forgot what I said.
All right. We're talking about the traits that...
Traits, yeah. Thank you. Aye. So traits. So different traits relate to, as I've described, so difficulty with language. So you might see that the student presents and they can talk eloquently and they can talk in great depth. But when we're asking them to compile a report or share the information, and when they're writing it down, the evidence you see in their writing doesn't match what they're talking, how they speak. So that would be a clear indicator that perhaps this person has difficulty with language. And it immediately then points to, in my mind, as being relating to dyslexia. So we might know a family member or another peer or a colleague that has dyslexia, and we can recognise these traits within the student. So we would then have to have a very skillful conversation with the student about dyslexia, and just being mindful, we can't say somebody's got this or that. You know, it would be, and that's where it's easier for me, because I have dyslexia, so I can relate to me and my difficulties, and then, you know, mirror that as to the student and saying, I have noticed you do similar things. Have you noticed that? And hopefully that would then open the conversation about how they feel about that. But the difficulty, if somebody has dyslexia and they don't disclose, often that's because of the stigma is often attached to these areas, whether it's, you know, dyslexia or poor mental health or something similar. Folk often don't disclose because of a negative experience that's happened previously. And often, again, folk who have dyslexia may not talk about getting reasonable adjustments or think about reasonable adjustments, because often they don't know what helps them. Often folk with dyslexia will develop these their own strategies, and some of them are negative. So it may be, for me in my experience, so reading. So I have another condition called Mears-Erlin syndrome, which is, in other words, is visual stress. So when I look at text on a page, it appears to be moving. So for years, I had difficulty to read, but didn't know that was what's going on. You can get, usually in the school, if the kids have experienced that, they get coloured overlays. And the reason they get coloured overlays is because it can change day to day as to what colour suits best. But you can get coloured lenses, so I actually have two coloured lenses that cut down on that experience when reading. So me, I wouldn't read very much because of this condition where the words were moving on the page. So that's a negative coping strategy, if you like. When nobody able to read, I don't read. And you'll find a lot of folk who have dyslexia will do similar things relating to the difficulties they have, but they might not realise that's what they're doing because, you know, we're all wonderful, creative human beings, and we do things that suit us best for, you know, to have an easy life, if you like.
Thanks, Robert. And thinking about, again, our practice supervisors and assessors out in clinical practice, how do they fit into all of this? How can they best support students who have dyslexia, who have disclosed that they have dyslexia?
So, yeah, that's a, so in relation to, so when we get a student comes along, you know, happily to a practice learning environment and you're having your first meeting, and, you know, we're going through the paperwork in the pad. And part of that is, you know, the orientation, excuse me. And within that, you'll see there's one of the titles talks about reasonable adjustments, you know, and as your PA or PS, you're having that discussion with your student. And when you get to that section, you know, you're asking, so do you require any reasonable adjustments in practice? And often the student will just look back quizzily, not quite sure what you mean. Because often they don't require any reasonable adjustments or they haven't thought about it. But if they do have a reasonable adjustment plan in place, you would hope at that point they'll disclose, yep, I have dyslexia. Here's my reasonable adjustment plan. Here's what's worked well in my previous placement. And then that would be that process of negotiating to determine whether the reasonable adjustment plan that was put in place still fits in this current placement. And if it doesn't, then the suggestion would be is to go back to the university, and the student has that discussion. They can invite along the PA if they like to help inform them in practice. But you would hope that you would alter the reasonable adjustment plan if it doesn't, if it no longer fits. And it may no longer fit, not just specifically because it's a different learning environment. It might be because the person themselves have changed. You know, so often some things that were a challenge in one area have improved. We're not going to change. You're not going to suddenly not be dyslexic anymore. But that may have changed, so that reasonable adjustment plan might not be in place. So it could be something, for example, as they don't actually type up the forms. In some practice areas, particularly community teams, they use what's called WinVoice. And most of the practitioners have a wee digital voice recorder. And again, that's what I had in my previous team, was I would just dictate my letters and then they get sent through electronically to the secretarial team and they then type up the letter. So that might be a reasonable adjustment that you think about as when typing up a report. And you would have to use the code within the report. So it would have to be the different sections so that the typist knows what you're talking about and where to put that information. So it would have to be set up in advance, but that might be an adjustment that they have. Or again, it may be when you're providing information to the student about going out in a placement or going out to see a patient, you provide them written information as opposed to giving them lots and lots and lots of information, maybe, you know, how to get there or whatever. So that would be the ideal world that the student discloses at that point. Mm-hmm. So and then the PA knows how to support the student based on the information that's in the reasonable adjustment plan and the negotiation to see, is there anything else we need to think about whilst you're here? And hopefully the student, you know, will come up with some suggested strategies.
And I guess that kind of brings me to thinking about, so do the students have responsibilities in terms of their dyslexia? Do you know, thinking about the NMC and the NMC code, what are their responsibilities?
Yeah, so you can actually relate to the information that's in their pad as well. So within the pad, you know, it talks about being having a professional attitude. And I suppose you could also link that to a duty of candor, you know, that disclosing that if they have a difficulty, you have a challenge, then I've got a responsibility as a practitioner to seek support and guidance and help, and not just to, you know, insist that I have the information when I don't. And so, and again, it's within the practice assessment document as well, within the NMC code, thinking about, you know, the sections in there that we could relate to how to help the student understand the necessity to disclose and how that would help them as a practitioner.
And it's going back to that, you know, like being aware of their own knowledge and I guess their own ability to carry out a task and the responsibility they have for that, isn't it?
Yep. So again, it's the NMC and the proficiencies. If you think about it, it's actually 1.6 within that. The PAD is they're thinking about their own health and their own well-being and, you know, awareness and knowledge of their ability to carry out a task. If their dyslexia creates a difficulty in carrying out a task, then the reasonableness from that is getting some additional support and guidance to help them carry out that task in relation to, you know, patient safety and risk management.
And I guess the last question I wanted to ask you was, so if a student either doesn't disclose that they have dyslexia or, for example, all the reasonable adjustments that they need are put in place, but they're still heading towards failure, they're still not meeting the standards that are required by the NMC, what would we do about that? How could we best support them?
Yep, so we've thought there about the scenario where the student comes along with a reasonable adjustment plan and we're putting these strategies in place. And as the placement's continuing to take place, as a, you know, practice assessor, practice supervisor, you know, you're maybe still thinking, this student's still not coming up to the standard. At that point, obviously, we're hoping to have a chat with a student to help determine where the student feels they are and what it is they can do about where they currently are. But again, not forgetting we can, you know, come back to the university and suggest to go back and speak to the disability service to see if they can have a look at that and see if they can help and where the current difficulties are. And the other alternative as well is giving ourselves a practice education facilitator or care home education facilitator, depending on where you're working, giving them a call. And, you know, you can maybe kind of shoot the breeze, if you like, about suggestions and ideas without stepping into the formal process. And the formal process would be, you know, inviting the practice educator or the care home educator into a meeting. So it would be a tripartite setup and invited there along. So you'd have your student, the PA or the PS or both, and the academic assessor as well, they would be involved as well as the student to look at how do we all come together. And often this is viewed as in a negative way, that somehow, you know, the student's been hauled over the coals. But I would stress that this is very positive, because if you've got all these other individuals who are involved in the support of the student to help them, the way I like to think about that is building the scaffold around the student to help them, to support them at that point when they need help. And having more, you know, more brains involved can help that fantastic discussion with everybody involved to help come up with, you know, solutions that help, that support. But at the centre of that would be the student. You know, we're absolutely involving the student in this discussion about what they think is helpful, what they feel is reasonable. And, you know, when they're lost for an idea, we give them a step for a hint. But it's built on what it is they need. We can offer the advice and guidance about, you know, meeting the standards and how we can achieve that within the practice learning environment and the experiences that we can undertake to help achieve the proficiencies, etc. But it's that multidisciplinary, coming together. And, you know, tapping into the resources that are there, these rich resources, as in, you know, your different practitioners, to come together to look at supporting the student. And obviously from that, you will create a development and support plan, which is set out in a way that's, you know, a SMART goal, so it's specific, etc. So the student knows exactly what it is it's expected of them to improve, and they've got the evidence to show how they can move forward and make these adjustments to meet the standards and come up to the standard that's expected. But it sounds quite complex, but it's actually very beneficial. And I've been involved in, you know, more than one tripartite meeting, and it can be quite emotive and quite emotional for the student because there's so many folk in the room and it is quite overwhelming, forgetting that we're all there to help, because it's often seen as negative. So the takeaway for this, I would say, is having the PEF involvement or a tripartite involvement for any student should be pitched as being, or if it's a student that's listening to this, that's, it's positive. It's a positive outcome to get this support because we want you to succeed. We don't want you to fail. That's what we are there for, is to help you succeed. And, you know, tap into that. Ask for help. Identify where your needs are, or get help to identify where your needs are.
That's great, Robert. Thanks very much, and thanks for sharing your experiences with us today and giving us a wee insight into dyslexia and how we can best support students out in clinical practice. And I'm sure our practitioners will find this really helpful to listen to. And just to let everybody know that the practice education team are running workshops and supporting students who require reasonable adjustments. And if anybody would like to take part in one of them, please go to our website at NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde Practice Education, or you can ask your local practice education facilitator or care home education facilitator for details. But we realise that not everybody can get to a scheduled session. So if you can't, your local PEF or CHEF will be able to support you locally with that. And we've also got lots of other resources related to reasonable adjustments in our web pages. So if you're interested, please go on and have a look.
Thanks for listening. And remember, we would like to hear about any subjects you would like us to talk about. Email us at letstalkpracticeeducation@ggc.scot.nhs.uk. And please visit our website at NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde Practice Education, and there you'll see all of our resources that will help to support you to maintain a quality learning environment. And you can also follow us on Twitter at NHSGGCPEFs.